Welcome to the world of Mark's Money Mind, coming to you this 4th of July weekend from Longmont, Colorado. I'm your host, Mark Troutman. This educational personal finance show combines money lessons, timely topics, personal stories, and community wisdom to help listeners and viewers master their finances to enjoy a stress-free life of financial freedom. Well, in the last episode, we talked about new accounts that are available to children to invest for their retirement purposes, aka Trump accounts. And that was a result of the actions in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that was enacted or put into law a year ago. And there was another aspect of that that I wanted to cover today, hopefully briefly. Maybe this won't be too long. Hopefully I won't drag it out. Hopefully you're enjoying your 4th of July weekend. I'm not sure exactly when this will post, but it will come out shortly thereafter. And after that, I will be going to a Camp 5 Rocky Mountain. And maybe I will try to record an episode there if I have the opportunity. Those are always fun to do, so look out for that. Maybe I will have an option of being able to do that. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. I will bring my equipment and hopefully I will be able to do that. If you're listening to this and we are there, hopefully you can hang out with me a little bit and we have some fun together. It's always a great time to see everyone at those events. There's actually 5 of them this year, which is crazy. I will be at 2 of them. So hopefully I see you there. And I just wanted to talk about one of the other changes that occurred as a result of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, or as I like to call it, the OB3. And that is how the student loan landscape has changed. A couple of good things, a couple maybe not so good things, depending on how you look at it. But I wanted to just highlight these. This is the time of year that students will start thinking about their fall enrollment and potentially how are they going to pay for it. So some of these new modifications are important to be aware of. So let's first talk about one thing I noticed as I was looking over my daughter's student loan statement, and I was helping her log into her account and checking it out. And one thing I noticed, it was a little pop-up that said, hey, by the way, if you are auto-enrolled in the student loan repayment, typically you receive a 0.25% discount for that auto payment. But as of July 1st, the interest rate will be reduced instead of by 0.25%, a full percentage point if you enroll in auto payment. So I was thinking, well, she's already enrolled in auto payment. Does that apply to her? And the answer is yes. If you are already auto enrolled to repay your student loans, it will become effective automatically. However, if you're just paying your student loans directly and not through auto pay, I highly recommend you sign up for that, at least for the minimum payment. And you have up until September 30th of this year to enroll to receive that 1 percentage point drop in the rate on your loan. So that's a nice little benefit. And I was unaware of it. I did not realize that that was going into effect. So many people may not be aware of it. And certainly if you are auto paying already, it's just going to be reflected in your July statements going forward. And so that was kind of interesting to hear. Now let's jump to some of the changes that have occurred. First, let me talk about what the rates are. Those rates change every year based on the current interest rate environment. Any loans that are disbursed after July 1st of 2026 and through July 1st of 2027, the interest rates are as follows. For undergraduate borrowers, that rate is 6.52%. For graduate or professional borrowers, that rate is 8.07%. So quite a bit higher than it has been in the past. I know My daughter was lucky to get some minor loans that she has decided to pay off slowly because the interest rate is so low. And I believe one was 3.5%, which will now be 2.5%. And the other was 2.75% and will now be 1.75%. So there's not a lot of incentive to pay that off quickly if you can literally have money sitting in a money market account earning more and you can make the spread. But these new rates are quite a bit higher. So people are definitely going to want to pay those off as quickly as possible. There's also something called a loan application fee, effectively, or a loan fee. And that is kind of an underwriting fee that's applied to the loan initially when it's first taken out. And that is 1.057%. And that has not changed over the past number of years. And it's kind of like an underwriting fee. So that comes out first. And then the interest is applied on those loans going forward. If it's a subsidized loan, it does not accrue interest while you're in school. If it's unsubsidized, it does, but you don't have to pay anything back until you're no longer a full-time student. So that really hasn't changed. Some of the other things that potentially have changed, we'll talk about things that have changed and things that haven't changed. So first, let's talk a little bit about the loan limits. So for undergraduate students, you can borrow up to $5,500 in the first year, of which $3,500 can be subsidized. So you have to fill out the FAFSA and they look at the income of the family to determine whether the student is eligible for a subsidized loan. So up to $3,500 of that $5,500 could be subsidized. And the maximum that can be borrowed in that first year is $5,500 under that program. In the second year, it goes up a little bit. So $6,500 in the second year, of which up to $4,500 can be subsidized. And in the third year and beyond, it's $7,500, of which $5,500 can be subsidized. So no changes there, the same as it has always been. And you may notice that it is not adjusted for inflation. The maximum amount that a undergraduate can borrow is $31,000, of which $23,000 could potentially be subsidized. And that is the same as it has always been. So no changes there. These are not adjusted for inflation every year. So you may start to say, hey, this isn't a lot of money. So what else can we do? Before we go to the Parent PLUS loan changes, because there's quite a few there, let's talk a little bit about graduate students. If you're a graduate student, you can borrow up to $20,500 per year, and that has not changed. For professional students, so that would be things like doctors, lawyers, things like that, and there's a whole list of what is considered a professional student. I won't get into all the details here, but instead of the $20,500 for graduates, professional students, which are typically kind of health professionals, doctors, like I said, and things like that, instead of $20,500 per year, they can borrow up to $50,000 per year. And there are some limits on that, and we'll get into that in a moment. Now, for the PLUS loans, which is the parent loan for undergraduate students, it used to be kind of unlimited. It was up to the cost of attendance minus any other aid received. And this is where some of the loans kind of got a little crazy, in that parents were often building up large balances as a result of financing everything that the student wasn't covering with their own loans or merit or things like that. And these loans kind of ballooned, and there's people in their 60s, parents, that still have these loans outstanding and have kind of been drowning in them. So to address that, I think what they wanted to do was cap that. Now you can only borrow as a parent under the PLUS loan program up to $20,000 on behalf of each student. What's also interesting is there is a new limit for those graduate students. As I mentioned, they could borrow up to $20,500 per year. And now there is a limit that is lower than previously. Previously, they could borrow up to $138,500 in total, on those loans, graduate loans, that is now capped at $100,000. And that is for the non-professional students. For the professional students, previously they were under the same kind of graduate cap of $138,500. They're now allowed to borrow up to $200,000, minus anything that was received as a graduate student. So effectively, non-professional students can borrow up to $100,000 as a graduate student, and the professional students up to $200,000. The other thing about the parent loans, previously there was no cap on it. And like I said, they could borrow now up to $20,000 per year, but there's also a lifetime cap of $65,000. So that's a way to try to prevent parents from getting in over their head, I guess you would say. And the one thing I would add on that $65,000 for the parent, that is per student. So if you had a number of children and you were maxing that out for each one, you still could potentially get in over your head. So that's something to be aware of as well. The other thing that I think is interesting that is a change is in the repayment programs. So there was a whole bunch of different options that were available, and then they were expanded. And then there was the ability to have some of your loans wiped out if you paid over a certain period of time. There's a lot of changes in what they're calling the Repayment Assistance Plan, RAP plan. And I can't go into detail on all of them because there's a lot of things here. But basically, think of it this way. They are based on your total adjusted gross income, or AGI. And what they're trying to do, kind of like what they did with the ACA, which is say, hey, if you only make this amount, only this percentage of your adjusted gross income is required to go towards student loan payments. And there's a whole table, but think of it this way. Basically, it increases by 1% of your AGI for each $10,000 that you earn, up to a maximum of $100,000. So if you earned between $10,000 and $20,000, you'd only be required to pay 1% of your adjusted gross income towards student loans. And let's say it's $50,000 to $60,000, it's 5% of your adjusted gross income. And if you make over $100,000, then you're not required to pay more than 10% of your adjusted gross income. So what they're trying to do is basically keep student loan payments within a reasonable range that people can afford. And the payment timeline is anywhere between 10 and 25 years. And here's what I think is the most important thing in this whole change in the loan repayment program. The way most people got into this kind of student loan debt treadmill was they were making minimum payments under certain repayment programs. And what was happening is the minimum payments were less than the interest that was accruing on the loan. So effectively, what was happening is the balance of the loan was growing, even though they were making the minimum payments. You hear these stories about someone says they borrowed $50,000, but now they owe $150,000. And you're thinking, how could that possibly be? Well, they were enrolled potentially in a repayment program where the monthly payment was lower than the interest that was accruing every month. So the balance was growing. And here's where I think the benefit of the new repayment program really shines. And that is, if your payment is below the interest due, your outstanding balance will never go higher than your total outstanding balance when you entered the repayment program. So effectively, those interest payments are subsidized to the point where your balance is not going to continue to grow. The wording is your total outstanding balance will never go higher than your total outstanding balance when you entered the RAP. And So that would imply that if your payment is less than the interest, the excess is just written off. So you're not going to increase your loan. It also means that you may be making those minimum payments, but your balance is not going down. So that's something to be aware of. So it's really important to understand how much of your payment is going towards interest and how much of your payment is going towards principal. And I know that when you look at student loan statements, it specifically breaks out how much of your payment is going towards interest, how much is going towards principal, and what your starting principal was and ending principal was during that period, which is typically a month, because that's typically your monthly statements. So it's really important to keep on top of that. Make sure your balances are going down. I've always been surprised, like, how did you not know that your balances were increasing? You just think, oh, well, I'm paying the minimum payment. It must be good. And then you read these stories about someone saying, I don't understand why my, you know, balance is higher. It's because your monthly payment wasn't paying all of the interest that was due, and it was what's called negatively amortizing, which means the balance was growing. So good thing going forward, that won't happen. But again, you will need to make monthly payments that exceed the interest in order for that balance to go down. The balance will not go down if your interest exceeds your payment. So you want to make sure that it is hopefully doing that. And maybe there's a reprieve during a period of time where you're having difficulty, but you want to make sure that those balances are going down over time. So I want to keep this short and sweet. I just kind of wanted to hit on this so that people are aware of some of the changes that are coming down the line. Again, for the undergraduate students, the amount you can borrow hasn't changed. There's some changes with the graduate students and now this new professional student category. And also the fact that if you already have student loans outstanding, that interest rate will drop by 1 percentage point if you sign up for auto payment. And I think that's a way to entice people to pay their student loans, because there are quite a few delinquencies in the student loan sphere. I don't have that number in front of me, but I believe it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 10% of student loans are non-performing, meaning that they haven't made a payment in the last 90 days. Don't hold me to that, but that's what I recall off the top of my head. It was a fairly high figure, and it may even be north of that. I'm not sure, but it's high nonetheless. So in a way to entice people to make those payments, they're kind of incentivizing people to sign up for auto pay, which I think is a good thing. And certainly for anyone that's already signed up, it's a big benefit. And then I'm going to link in the show notes some of the information from the federal student loan website, which is studentaid.gov, with some of this information. I'll put a link to the specific page, but kind of a Q&A. If I'm this kind of student, how am I affected by XYZ? So it's a nice way to just parse through all the rule changes that are pertinent to you and not worry about some of the ones that don't affect you. So I think that was helpful in the way that they rolled that out. So those are some of the changes coming down the pike. Again, I think a big benefit is in the repayment program, where you will no longer have your balances increase if you're enrolled in the appropriate loan repayment program for your income. And also, it looks like for lower income households, the amount that they're required to pay as a percentage of their AGI is reasonable. So I think that's good. And so hopefully we'll get on top of this student loan crisis and it won't get any worse. And hopefully people will start making payments and we can reduce those balances for most people. I hope you're having a great 4th of July weekend and subsequent week. If you're going to Camp Fi, I look forward to seeing you there. Hopefully I will be able to record an episode. We'll see. Cross your fingers. They're always fun. Maybe I'll try to rope my friend Kevin into it. Those are always fun. He's always fun to co-host with, and we'll see if we can do that. So until next time, I hope you are having an awesome summer and beating the heat. The heat has been crazy, certainly everywhere. So stay cool, and I'll catch you next time. Thank you for listening to this week's show. Please click follow on your favorite podcast player or subscribe on YouTube to ensure you don't miss any future episodes. Also, please leave a rating and review for the show. This helps improve the ranking and enables other like-minded people find the content in their podcast players. I would also appreciate it if you would recommend this show to friends and family that might benefit from this content. See you next time on the Mark's Money Mind Show. Until then, make some, save and invest, live on the rest. Now for the all-important disclaimer. This show is for education and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult the appropriate advisor or advisors before implementing anything you hear on this show or any other show for that matter. While I fully intend for everything on this show to be true and accurate at the time of each recording, occasionally errors may occur. So please do your own due diligence on anything discussed.